Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the Riptide. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Greetings, cretins.
Well, you got all of that one.
I tried to get a little extra bite that time.
You gave it some gusto, some oomph, I don't know what else, what other terms am I going to use?
Enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm, yes. You had some enthusiasm in there. You know who else has a lot of enthusiasm?
Our good friend John Blickman.
There you go. Yes, John Blickman. Yes. Enthusiasm. I mean, for life in general, but he Indeed. Really is enthusiastic about making some great brewing equipment to innovate your brew day. So you know, things like over the years, like the beer gun, you know, the
Riptide pump,
Riptide. The
Hop Rocket.
Name another one, John. Come on.
His conversion for the rims system out of the Hop Rocket and electric brewing. Right. It has done a lot there.
Yep. There you go.
And then
And you can check this all out on BlickmanEngineering.com. Great website. Really shows a lot of the cool I don't want to call them toys, pieces of equipment that you can use to improve your brew day. They also, you know, they also have a more basic line of equipment, the Anvil mm-hmm. series. Every bit is tough and,
durable
piece of equipment, but maybe, you know, a few less bells and whistles. So the price is a little bit lower, a little more entry level for you there. Check those out as well. If you get a chance, email our good friend John Blickman at feedback@blickmanengineering.com. Tell him how much you appreciate that he pays for the show. All right. So today we are doing questions that people have sent in via email. You can send them in brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com and we'll get those. Don't really answer those direct, but we get them on the show at some point in time. So feel free to send your questions in there. Or if you're listening live, you go to the comments section just below that video on the Brewing Network page on Facebook and enter your questions there live. And John will hopefully see those. And when he does, he will rattle them off. Today, we are talking about water, all water questions. John's all excited.
I'm practically wetting myself. Yeah.
He's wetting himself. Ooh, this one back from 2014. Wow.
Ooh,
Chris has waited a long time to hear this answer, John, so don't let him down.
Okay.
Chris writes, hey guys, I have a question regarding mineral additions during the mash boil. I read John Palmer's book, Water, which has a ton of great info. I live in Atlanta, which has a very soft water profile. Great for making light beer, not so good for making dark beer. I've stopped adding chalk to adjust pH, as I read it takes 3 hours to affect mash pH. I now add baking soda until I hit 100 ppm sodium. And this allows me to brew a 24 to 27 SRM beers. I hope to be able to brew 35 to 40 SRM beers. Any ideas on upping the bicarb effectively? I have heard slaked lime will do the trick. If slaked lime is a viable option, I have some questions. Any software to accurately determine how much to use? How to add it? Directly into the mash, or should I dissolve it first? 3, can I add it directly to the boil kettle? Thanks for the help, Chris.
Okay. You can use slake lime or pickling lime, as it were, calcium hydroxide to raise the alkalinity of your water to help you balance the acidity of your dark malts when you're brewing dark beers with soft water or low mineral water like Atlanta has. The one thing about residual alkalinity and adding alkalinity to your water to brew dark beers is that a little goes a long way. You don't need, I mean, you said you added baking soda until you're up to 100 ppm of sodium and think, okay, that's as high as I can go. Well, 100 ppm sodium is a guideline. It's not a hard and fast rule. But if you're adding that much baking soda to your water, I would imagine that your bicarbonate is around 250, 300 at that point. And that's a lot of alkalinity. I've learned through experience over the years that even for a Russian Imperial Stout, you don't need to get much more than, say, 100, 120, 150 alkalinity in the water, because that is enough to balance the acidity of the dark malts and hit the right mash pH. So get a pH meter, measure your pH, find out where you are with that respect to that. Calcium hydroxide works. But I have a feeling that you're probably not going to need it, that the baking soda will get you where you want to be without it. I think that covers most of his questions.
Yeah, I think, you don't want to overdo it in water adjustments.
My
lesson over life. And yeah, it's probably not going to take quite as much as you think to brew, darker beers.
Yeah. The color guide is simply an estimation. It's a numerical model. It's not hard and fast rules.
Those questions are, is there any software to accurately determine how much to use if you're using the slaked lime?
Yeah. My brewing spreadsheet has it. My brewing water adjustment app that you can get off Google and Apple include pickling lime, calcium hydroxide. I'm pretty sure Beersmith does too now. I mean, since this is from several years ago, I'm pretty sure that most of the brewing software incorporates lime, calcium hydroxide now.
How to add it? Do I add it directly into the mash or should I dissolve it first?
I would dissolve it in the water first. It dissolves quite easily. So I'd do it ahead of time.
Can I add it directly to the boil kettle?
There is no reason to add to the boil kettle.
Now you've answered all his questions.
Okay.
Good job, John.
Thank you.
Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have more of your questions right after this.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high temperature March pump, and either a top tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20 gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy All Grain Brewing System. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy. Easy.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're doing some of your water questions that have come in over the fine interwebs thing here.
Yeah.
Sheaf of questions about water. Let's see here. Lenhart writes, I think I have a strong theoretical understanding of water adjustment, and I've used Palmer's water sheet to adjust my mash pH for years. As a brewer, I'm moving into a new phase where instead of just brewing what I feel like, I'm going to try to dial in a few recipes in my favorite styles. And as I get there, I'm taking the advice to take water seriously. My local water is easy to work with, good for copper to light brown beer, but low in sulfate and chloride, which makes it easy to adjust. However, I live in Flagstaff, Arizona, 7,000 feet above sea level, and humidity between 5 and 20%. As a result, even a gentle boil drives off about 1.25 gallons of water per hour. My typical evaporation rate is about 20% per hour. As far as I can tell, this is totally normal for the local brewers I know, and none of us experience excessive melanoid development, in case you were wondering.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're at high altitude. Let's see here. Blah, blah, blah. Here's my question. Beyond what's necessary to achieve, and he says blah, blah, blah. I did not throw that in. I tend to read the questions exactly as written. I don't do too much editing. Here's my question. Beyond what's necessary to achieve the right mash pH, should I be thinking about the final concentration of salts in my beer or their initial concentration? That is, do I need to be taking into account the extra concentration of salts that results from such a large boil off? Cheers, Lenhart. I think that's a
good question
there.
Yeah. Generally, the answer is no. We don't concern ourselves with the final mineral composition.
You're boiling off 4%. It's just like, yeah, it's 4% more concentrated, but not a big deal.
Yeah. 20%, that's a significant amount of boil off, more significant amount of concentration. There's no guidelines out there for what the final mineral composition of the beer should be. So I guess it goes back to your taste. What do you taste in that final beer? Is it tasting minerally to you? Mm-hmm. If so, then yes, you may want to add back water going into fermentation or at the end of the boil to put back some of that concentration that's happened. The chemistry of the water is critical during the mash, because that's when we're trying to set up all the chemistry that's going to affect fermentation. So once the mash has happened, once the boil has happened, we can add back water and dilute that chemistry a bit without really affecting anything. The chemistry of the wort is important for fermentation as well, but adding distilled water back is not going to seriously affect that at all.
Yeah, it can affect, the concentration of proteins, head-forming proteins, things like that. I mean, there is some negatives. No matter what you do, brewing at 7,000 feet, I think you're going to run into one problem or another. But, maybe you just adjust back with a little bit of water, maybe not the full 20%, mm-hmm. but you add back, 5% in water, and that makes the difference between the minerally or not.
Yeah.
You tweak your mineral adjustments on the mash side to where maybe you don't need quite as much as you're using currently. I mean, that would only be if like you're saying, John, it tastes minerally, you taste it in the beer, the finished beer is having a problem. Then I would look at making these adjustments. If it's not, then adjust?
If it's not broken.
Right. But if it is, then a little bit of distilled water into the or RO water into the boil to help dilute it. And then a little bit maybe adjustment on the mash side. So you're not taking too much off of one end or the other.
Yeah.
Might work out well. Yeah. I think that makes sense. Okay. Christian writes, below are two water reports from my city. one December and the other July. I've been monitoring the water for over a year, and it seems that these are the two general profiles based on the season. I'm wondering just how different these two profiles actually are and how different my water adjustments should be. In other words, even though the numbers on the reports are different, are they basically the same or way different when it comes to making adjustments? Love the work that you do. Thanks, Chris. Let's see here. So in December, the pH was 7.3. It was 7.4 in September. It says December and September instead of July, but okay. Sodium, 10 parts per million in December, 19 parts per million in September. Potassium, less than one part per million, both. Calcium, 21 parts per million, went to 34 in September. Magnesium 10, magnesium 14. Total hardness, 94, 143 in September. Nitrates, nothing. Sulfate, 9 versus 10. Chloride, 22 versus 45. Carbonate, less than 1 in both. Bicarbonate, 68 in December, 105 in September. Total alkalinity, 55 in December, 86 in September.
Okay.
They're not that far off.
They're not. They're not that different. And really, with the exception of the total alkalinity bicarbonate, I would say they're the same. Mm-hmm. You know, everything else is below 50, so a low concentration. Mm-hmm. And the calcium, 20 to 30, basically, you know,
nothing.
Yeah, nothing. So the only one that
going from 10 to 19, that's nothing.
Yeah, that's nothing. The only significant difference is the increase in the alkalinity from, was it 80 to 100? I think it was, or maybe 50 to 80.
Total alkalinity went from 55 to 86 by carbon.
Okay, 50 to 80
to 105.
Yeah, that's a significant difference, but in the grand scheme of things, not a significant difference. You know, right. It's a noticeable jump, but it's really still in the same ballpark.
If you just boil the water, you drop some of that out.
Yeah. You're still going to be doing your calcium salt additions to get the calcium up to, you know, 75 or so, which is going to really counteract that amount of alkalinity. That amount of alkalinity at 80 is not a big deal. Mm-hmm. It allows you to brew a more amber beer versus a paler beer. But we're talking, you know, less than a tenth of a degree, or sorry, a tenth of a unit pH, you know, difference at this point. If you were talking a jump of, say, 80 to 160, yeah, that's when you start getting this significant pH changes in the mash. 50, 80, not a big deal.
Seems like his water service is actually doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Keeping him, you know, pretty close on the water.
Yeah, I'd tap that.
Look at you with the puns, the water puns. John doesn't get to use his water puns a lot.
That's right. That's right.
Really excited on a day like this when he gets to just... pun away. John is a punny guy. Let's see. Scott writes, apologies. All right. There's some typos in here, I gotta say.
Okay.
Apologies in advance. I'm sure you've been over this topic 4,867 times. I'm brewing a large Russian Imperial Stout in a few weeks and want to nail down the water as best I can. I've had my water tested by Ward Labs and have decent water for dark beers. I'm going to cut the total water with 3 gallons of RO to bring down the bicarbs. I'll attach my recipe and Beersmith water recommendations for reference. My question is specifically about residual alkalinity. If Beersmith is accurate, it says my mash pH should fall around 5.75, but to get it down to 5.2, Beersmith says I'll need to add more than 20 mils of lactic acid. That can't possibly be right. I've been listening to the water podcast, and I think I know that much acid will be bad. Am I overthinking this? I originally had calcium carbonate in there, but heard it's not very effective. Any advice would be appreciated. Love the show. Carry on, Scott Wilson.
Okay,
this is from 2020. I'll have you know.
Yeah. Great question. He sent a lot of data, sent some screenshots from Beersmith, and some of the more significant information is one that, you know, it isn't a Russian Imperial Stout. There's, you know, heavy charge of dark malts. It's a high gravity. So the malt is going to have an advantage over the water to a large extent. Yeah, he's got high alkalinity at 280 bicarbonate, which is more than I would want even for a Russian Imperial Stout. So I agree with him adding, you know, 25% RO water to cut those carbonates a bit. But looking at the number, the Beersmith results, yeah, I didn't agree with adding that amount of lactic acid. I think that would be overkill. So I ran the numbers in my water app, and I ended up recommending simple addition of calcium salts, 5 grams of calcium sulfate and 5 grams of calcium chloride to the 12 gallons of mash water that he was intending to use, targeting a final residual alkalinity of 120 for his Russian Imperial Stout. And this was not with any lactic acid additions. He sent back some data from his brew day, and he achieved a mash pH of 5.4. So just 120 residual alkalinity with that Russian Imperial Stout grain bill got him to 5.4. Now for Russian Imperial Stout, I would even recommend a slightly higher pH, 5.5, maybe even 5.6, to help open up that malt character a little bit more. You know, this example, this email just goes to show how much of, how far a computer model can carry you, because, you've really got to brew it. You've got to test it and see where you come out. Because Beersmith, my own water calculators, they're estimates, they're guidelines to help you and help you make the decisions on, you know, what kind of adjustments to make. They're not, you know, it's not foolproof. It's not, they're not exact.
That's one of the things I love about commercial brewing is, you know, we're brewing the same beer, you know, multiple times a week, or, you know, at least weekly on some, you know, and making an adjustment. I can go like, let's try this, let's try that, you know, and just these changes, you can see pretty quickly how they work, because it's all same ingredients, same process, same people. And, you know, you can see your adjustments almost, you know, I don't want to say real time, but it's really nice. And that's one of the things I think as a home brewer, you have to brew the same beer multiple times. Can't just brew a different beer every time. You can,
right?
And there's nothing wrong with that. And most people enjoy doing that. But if you really want to dial something in, if you really want to be, you know, a great brewer, if you really want to make, you know, God's gift to beer, you got to brew it multiple times, and you've got to, you know, make these adjustments and, you know, figure out exactly how to, you know, tweak things into perfection. So it takes some doing.
Yep.
If you are up in the Reno, Nevada area around Sparks, our good friends, Josh and RJ at Brew Chatter, They've got all sorts of water adjustment stuff there, and they even got the water book, and they got a lot of knowledge on water, and I'm sure they can help you out as well. Check them out. Our fine sponsors, Brew Chatter, brewchatter.com. Good guys. And if you're up there, like John and I were just recently, partake in their wonderful bar of you know, curated fantastic beers, and the local breweries and restaurants and casinos. Yeah. And what a wonderful place it is.
Yeah, it's a good beer town. I was surprised at the number of breweries and the really high quality beers they were serving there.
Oh yeah. No, Reno's a great place to go for beer travel. Yeah. They got a lot of great brewers up there. Very, very enjoyable. Let's see here. What do we got left? Okay. I'm going to do one more before we take another break. Let's see here. Salt additions to mash. Adam writes, "Hello, royal asshats of the highest order. Suppose I were brewing a pale ale with 100% RO water and 100% 2-row with the pH adjusted using acidulated malt to 5.2. Is there any reason to add salts to the mash tun, or should I reserve salt additions for the boil kettle? Thanks for all you do, Adam."
I would say yes, there is a reason to add salts to the mash tun, even if you're using RO water and acid, you know, acidulated malt to get the pH. Because there's more to chemistry than just pH. There is the mineral composition and the calcium, the magnesium that goes into the water, that goes into the mash, facilitates, you know, more chemistry than what we're immediately aware of.
There is some in the malted grains.
Yes.
That come part of the environment they were grown in, but they're minimal.
Yeah. So I think augmenting that, I mean, I've tasted a lot of beers in competition. You know, both Jamil and I, we've been judging beer for the last 20, 30 years. And you'll taste beers that have a watery finish. They just don't seem to have much finish to them. And I think very often they have been brewed with RO water alone. And there's just not the mineral structure to support the beer's flavors in those beers as there is with a more normal tap water or RO water that's had mineral additions to it to bring up those mineral levels and give support to the beer's flavors.
Yeah, I would agree. You definitely need something in there. You should build a basic water and at least use that in the mash. People continue to use acidulated malt. I am not a fan of acidulated malt because I think it's harder to control your pH. And, you know, once you do it, you're kind of in there, you're kind of committed to that acidulated malt when you can just use some lactic acid. I mean, same. Unless you're working under the Rheinheitsgebot, it is not necessary to use acidulated malt. So I've always been preferential to not using it and just use lactic acid for adjustments.
It is simpler.
Yes. Yeah. And easy if you're a little short to add a little bit more to get your pH correct, because if you start throwing in more acidulated malt, there is starch in there that will change your gravity. So if you have like a target gravity and all of a sudden you're adding, you go like, oh, the pH isn't right, I'm going to add more acidulated malt, it's kind of like, well, now your gravity's gone too. So I don't know, just a thing. There you go. All right. Let's take another short break. And when we come back, we'll have more of your questions right after this.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting.
This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking water.
Great for drinking.
I thought you were going to have a good water pun.
I didn't have one ready. Oh,
people should drink in this information.
That's right. Yes. Imbibe.
Mm-hmm. Imbibe this information.
Suck it up. Yep.
Imbibe's a nice brewery up in the Reno area.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it? No wonder I had that word on the tip of my tongue.
Justin writes, hey, guys, I'll get right to it. I work as a chemist and I have a good understanding of pH, I hope. However, there seems to be a lot of conflicting information on the ideal range for mash pH. My understanding is that 5.2 to 5.4 is ideal at mash temperatures, while 5.4 to 5.8 is the best range when measuring a cooled sample at room temp. This has seemed to work for me in the past. However, I was recently listening to Brad Smith, and he corrected a speaker for describing an optimal range of 5.4 to 5.8. He said that he shoots for 5.2 at room temperature. I am in the process of running a few experimental batches to test this, but I can only devote so much of my brewing to experiments. Can you please clear up the debate of ideal mash pH and measurement temperature? Thanks, Justin.
Okay. Well, I happen to have in front of me the treatment of brewing water in the light of modern chemistry from 1935.
Okay.
And in it, it says, in summarizing the aforementioned facts and stressing their importance, we emphasize that the master brewer must create a proper medium for the process of mashing, hopping, boiling, and fermenting in order to produce a fine, full-flavored finished product. Thus, the water must be so treated that at the conclusion of the mashing process, the wort will not only be at the correct pH between 5.2 and 5.7, but also that the chemical constitution of the wort will be such that the further brewing processes will naturally occur at its most suitable pH levels. The Wallerstein-Burton salts treatment adjusts the pH value in relation to the really important factor, namely the chemical composition of the water, and this adjustment assures reliable and certain results in practice. It is important for the brewer to recognize that the pH should be adjusted by the proper treatment of the water and that any further adjustment of wort by additions in the kettle or during fermentation is not only unnecessary, but in many cases harmful. By proper initial adjustment of the acidity and buffer capacity of the brewing water, the necessity for any further modification is eliminated. Just lovely stilted language in the selling of their Burton salts. But even as far back as 1935, we recognized that 5.2 to 5.7, as measured at room temperature, was the range. Now, how do we know room temperature versus mashing temperature? Well, when pH was initially developed as a test, it was done at room temperature in the laboratory. And I confirmed this with Dr. Ludwig Narsis of Germany and BLB fame. And he said, yeah, that's why the EBC method and the ASBC method reference testing wort and beer pH at room temperature. That's where it's always been stated. Now, more recent work by various authors, including Charlie Bamforth and Wolfgang Kuntz and Briggs from Multimedia Science, they will do, you know, mash measurement or pH measurements at mash temperature and determine the optimum pH for highest extraction yield. It's important to remember that the optimization of any one parameter, such as yield, you know, the most starch and sugar from the mash, is not necessarily the optimum for best beer flavor and best fermentation. So, yes, you will see data that suggests that you get higher yield at higher pHs, such as 5.8. But when it comes to overall quality of the beer flavor, a little lower pH helps brighten up that malt and hop character. It helps avoid tannin extraction during the sparge. I mean, there's a number of other considerations that come into what the optimum pH is.
There you go. Well, yeah. So to answer the question with more brevity, I would say that, yes, these things are always measured at, room temperature, 60 degrees Fahrenheit or, 20 degrees C or whatever it would be. And, there's always a temperature measurement for it. And while you can measure the mash temperature higher, no standards are set that way. Standards are always set at, these lower control temperatures. All your equipment's calibrated to a certain temperature. That's where the measurements are done. The pH tends to be off like 0.3 between mash temperature and, actual room temperature. Yeah. So you don't necessarily have to chill it down all the way to measure it. You can just take the 0.3 factor and just say, yeah, that's close enough. Give you an idea, ballpark, if you want to just get a quick test. It's always Brad is correct. It's measured at whatever temperature. And yeah, the range, like John's saying, 5.2 to 5.7, doesn't have to be 5.2 to 5.4, but that's what, most people are targeting. Commercial brewers are targeting, commercial craft brewers. And again, it's not about getting the most extraction, which you might get at, 5.8. It's about producing the best tasting beer that you might get at a different temperature or a different pH. So, yeah, there you go. All right. Jason writes, John and Jamel, during one of your water series, your guest talked about mixing lactic acid with chalk to RO water to get the lactic flavor. Is this a way to add chalk for usable calcium? My water is RO water with 7 parts per million calcium. Thanks, Jason.
Well, that's kind of like, I don't know. Adding acid to chalk burns away the carbonate, leaves you the calcium, but you could just add calcium chloride or calcium sulfate to get your calcium without releasing lots of lactate and carbon dioxide as byproducts. So yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I didn't understand this question. To be 100% truthful here, I was just like, well, we'll just let John deal with this. But he says, as a way to get the lactic flavor. So there's a desire to have the lactic flavor.
Oh, all right.
But then he says, is this a way to add chalk for usable calcium?
Yeah, I guess it is. If you are trying to both get usable calcium into your water and into your brew, and you're trying to generate lactic flavor, you certainly don't want to add too much acid and drop down below the amylase conversion pHs, and get the wort too acidic and lose your yield that way. So neutralizing acid, that.
You mentioned dropping acid. Yeah. Dropping acid all the time.
So neutralizing the excessive lactic acid with calcium carbonate would be one way to do that. Or fermenting doing a kettle sour if you're looking for lactic flavor would also work.
Right.
What year was that question from?
2015.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know. We've done 300 plus shows. So I can't really recall which guest it was that talked about mixing lactic acid with chalk to RO water.
Yeah, me either. I don't recall it coming up.
Fascinating. It's like a time machine. Cracking these things open like a time machine, I'm telling you. Yeah. Interesting. Well, in the title of his email was Water Munich Beer.
Yeah, Munich certainly not known for lactic flavors, that's for sure.
Right. So I have no idea. I have no idea what Jason is asking here. I think we covered it pretty good. Hey, we try here. We actually try. And we will get to every question at some point. So don't lose faith. We will get to them. And I'll mix in some newer ones too. So if you want to send some, go ahead and send them. Let's do this. One more short break. And we'll have more of your questions right after this.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. Let's see here. We're doing your questions that you've written in. You can send them in. Brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com. Any questions you have about brewing or whatever else, just try and keep them relatively brief. Try and focus on one question per email, and so feel free to send as many emails as you want, but try and keep them to readable lengths. It makes it easier for the show if I don't have to chop them up and figure them out that way. So, but we do enjoy your questions. It keeps us going. It's what we live, what John and I live for is your questions. Andrew writes, hi, John. First off, let me say that your book and podcasts have brought my home brewing to a whole new level. I appreciate everything you have taught me and thank you immensely. I've been listening to the Brew Strong podcast on water chemistry and had a question for you regarding mineral levels. Can you tell me if the following numbers look right? This is for Boulder, Colorado water, which is pretty clean stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got his Boulder water report. It says alkalinity 45, calcium 50, hardness 57, magnesium 7. It says, therefore, the individual mineral concentrations calculated from this would be magnesium 1.7 parts per million, calcium 20 parts per million, bicarbonate 54.9 parts per million. These were the only three I had to derive from the report. The others were listed individually. Did the three calculations above look right? Thanks so much, John. I really appreciate your help and all you do for the homebrewing community. Cheers, Andrew. This one's a golden oldie, April 2011.
Ooh, we're reaching. Wow. Decade plus. Those numbers sound right. Yeah. Your hair wasn't gray back then. Neither was mine, come to think of it.
There's a lot of things that weren't back then. Yeah. Yeah,
50 calcium hardness is 50. That's one equivalent. So it works out to about 20 ppm of calcium ion. So that calculation is correct. You also had roughly one equivalent of alkalinity, so that makes it for 50 to 60 bicarbonate, a little bit of magnesium, 1.7 ppm. Those numbers check out. And that makes sense for Denver water, because Denver tap water, it's coming mostly from snowmelt. It's very low in minerals overall. So even if they're pulling it out of some wells, around the city, generally, it's recent precipitation, hasn't been in the ground long, and it's low mineral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then good palate to build whatever else you want on it. I'm wondering, perhaps we should do a show called "How to Read Your Water Report."
Yeah. It seems like we may have done that during some of the water ganses, but certainly wouldn't hurt to hit it again.
Right. Well, we title it that, so it makes it easier for people to find.
Yeah. Exactly.
Out of the 303 shows we've done. let's put that. Let's put that on the list. I think that's a good idea.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's certainly easy to do.
Yeah, water is one of those topics that remains popular. Yeast and water. I wonder why.
Yeah.
you know, and people seem to struggle with, you know, looking at their water and saying, is it right? Is it not right? Is it, you know, how much should I change it? Should I not worry about it? And a lot of people, I think, are needlessly using RO and stripping their water down and then building it back up. And I guess a lot of places that it's only wasteful of energy and not much else because they have plenty of water. Places like California, there's not that much water, and using RO really, you know, you're losing like half of it. In most RO setups. So it'd be nice to, you know, avoid that. But I think people are just way too quick to jump on the RO bandwagon. Here at Heretic, we brew everything. We don't need RO. I mean, you know, the water's fine. And, you know, it's people, you know, I see people deal with water like this and they're like, oh, I need to do RO. It's like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
You can make, you know, minor adjustments with some minerals depending on the beer you want to brew and you're good to go. We brew, you know, pilsners, we brew, you know, soft pillowy hazies. We brew, you know, standard IPAs, we brew dark beers, we brew them all. You know, it just takes a bit of adjustment. It doesn't tend to be, you know, no need to strip it down and start over.
Right. Yeah. You're right. I mean, it would be good to do another show like that because there's so many misconceptions. You know, they get told when they move into a house, oh, yes, you all have really hard water. You need a water softener. Mm-hmm. And so they think, oh, I got this really hard water. I can't brew with it. No, it's fine. You know, just, and yeah, you know, so as you said, they overreact and install RO systems when, you know, just like the Denver water, perfectly fine. The Atlanta water earlier was also good for brewing. Yeah, it had some alkalinity, but not a non-adjustable amount.
Yeah.
And yeah. So yeah, it, water adjustment's not as complicated as everybody makes it out to be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does take some time and understanding, you know, where in the ballpark you are with these various minerals, you know, high, low, medium. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, maybe we can get some examples of people's water reports, although you've probably been sent hundreds over the past.
Oh yeah. Years. I got a bunch.
Right. You can pull up some examples of what they are, and we can, it'd be great if we could show those on the video as well.
I could share screen since it's Zoom.
Right.
You know, we're working through them. I could share a screen and show some.
Yep. That'd be great. Okay. Let's plan on doing that.
Okay.
Good to see you, brother.
You too.
Good to spend time with you and all our listeners. And hope you guys are staying safe, brewing lots of beer, and having lots of fun. Make sure to support our good sponsors, Blickman Engineering, BlickmanEngineering.com, BrewChatter, BrewChatter.com. All good folks. They really care about the homebrew community, and that's why they're paying for the show, because they feel like we do as well. So until then, everybody, brew strong.
Brew strong, everyone.